This is The Guardian.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Before we start, this episode contains some very strong language and references to grooming. Doctor Who's new villain is drag queen Jinx Monsoon.
Hello, and blessed be to the graduating class of whatever year you're watching this on YouTube.
Our queer characters finally snatching the spotlight.
You've got it, sweet cakes. No more talking, singing, zip.
You're so weird.
You have no idea.
You're listening to Pop Culture with me, Shantae Joseph, for The Guardian. If I think back to my childhood and the sort of characters I watched on TV, I remember him from Powerpuff Girls and Jafar from Aladdin. And it's only now, as an adult, that I see how problematic some of those depictions were. Not only were these characters using stereotypes of queerness, it was also hidden and alluded to. So when it was announced that Doctor Who had cast drag queen Jinx Monsoon as their next villain, I worried that this was problematic. But with Doctor Who in the safe hands of Russell T. Davis, I thought, actually, this could low-key be iconic.
I performed at the show called Gallifrey Cabaret, which is Doctor Who themed drag and cabaret night at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern. It's a lot of fun, and I think partly because the audience is all Doctor Who related.
David Chipakupaku is a Scottish Zambian journalist and writer and performs under the name Black Mamba.
I love Jinx Monsoon. Every single announcement that has come out of this show recently has just got me so excited about the future of Doctor Who. But Jinx Monsoon, for people who don't know, is a two-time winner of RuPaul's Drag Race, which is the biggest reality competition show for drag performers, for drag queens specifically.
I am so honored to be honored here tonight at this imaginary event.
She's also a trans feminine person, and it is really exciting to be seeing drag represented in this way, to see trans people represented in this way. She's been described as like the Doctor's like deadliest enemy yet, and that gets thrown around a lot. Like, there'll be like a fight and a debate between like the Daleks and the Cybermen and the Master and all these big villains who are like, no, I'm
the best,
the Doctor's most deadliest enemy. No, I'm the best. It feels like a new era is coming in, a new kind of new representation, but also just exciting new characters that we've not really kind of seen before in Doctor Who in that kind of sense.
Yeah.
It's always been queer-coded. There's always been little suggestions and hints, and there's always been camp associated with Doctor Who. I think to see Jinx take on a huge role like that is deeply exciting as a
yeah.
fan.
Yeah, this whole idea of like Doctor Who having a relationship with like representing queerness kind of goes way before Jinx Monsoon. Like there's so much that's happening. You kind of said yourself, Doctor Who's always felt like a little bit camp, but are there like any other moments specifically that you kind of think of as like very queer adjacent moments in Doctor Who history?
So there was, in the classic series, there's never really any explicit. So when I say the classic series, I mean 1963 to 1989, the original run of Doctor Who. There's never really any explicit mentions of LGBT plus people, because for a good portion of that, A, homosexuality was illegal and then legalized. And then by the time you get to the 80s, you've got Section 28 being brought in by the Thatcher government. So there's never really a kind of like explicit, here's a gay companion, here's a lesbian companion. And like the idea of even contemplating trans people is like, I think, way beyond a mainstream 1970s, 1980s audience. However, the final companion of the classic era of Doctor Who is a girl called Ace. And she starts off with the Doctor as a kind of 16-year-old rebellious teenager. And there are very subtle hints all the way through the show that she's a lesbian. And there is very heavy lesbian subtext all the way through that those episodes between Ace and one of the cheetah people. There's conversation about the fact that had Doctor Who gone beyond 1989, that Ace would have been the first lesbian companion on screen. You don't have to cut to like 2005 when Russell T Davies brought the series back, and you've got Captain Jack, played by John Barrowman, who is pansexual.
Captain Jack Harkness, at your service. Me and the Doc, we go way back. This is important.
You have the first, you know, kind of queer moments in Doctor Who in that series. But then the first full-time gay companion to the Doctor is Bill, played by Pearl Mackie.
There was this girl, student, beautiful, like a model, only with talking and thinking.
In 2016. But then most recently, you've got Mandip Gill, who played Yaz, and it was the first time that you saw a same-gender relationship between the companion and the Doctor was between the 13th Doctor, played by Jodie Whittaker, and Yaz, played by Mandip Gill. I think quite transformative, really. There were some fans who complained that it didn't go far enough, and it would have been nice for it to have done more, because they don't kiss on screen, but there's a really strong intimacy between those two characters in their last couple of stories. And that was really special to witness when it went out the first time.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff around this whole idea of that people felt like it was queer baiting, because that they were kind of being breadcrumbed this idea of like potential queer love, but never actually fully committed to it. Like, how did you feel about those accusations?
I disagree strongly with that. And the reason I disagree with it is because the cast and the crew explicitly said, this is a queer relationship. And it wasn't something that they initially started out doing when Jodie Whittaker started as the Doctor in 2017. And Yaz is a companion that travels with her all the way through her era. And it wasn't something they planned when Jodie's first series aired. But when the fans, just before they started filming series 12, the fans online were like, oh my goodness, there's all this really lovely subtext between them. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a proper queer relationship? And Chris Chibnall, who was the writer at the time, went, well, why don't we do it? Why don't we start making these references? And the crescendo comes at the end of Jodie Whittaker's era, where she's being picked up by Yaz and taken back to the TARDIS. And there's all these romantic references and gestures. And the second last episode, they sit on a beach and the Doctor goes, I love you, but I can't be in a relationship with you because I will outlive you. I will, you know, I'm an alien.
If I do fix myself to somebody, I know sooner or later, it'll hurt.
So I want to be in love with you, but I can't. So I don't think it's baiting. Mm. Yes, it would have been nice for it to have gone further. It would have been nice to see them kiss on screen. It would have been nice for them to kind of be like properly in a relationship for a series or so. Rose and the 10th Doctor don't kiss until their final episode.
Right.
I don't feel like it was any less of a relationship than previous Doctor Companion relationships have gone before. I don't think it was bait. I thought it yes, it would have been nice for it to go further, but there's more to it than that. And they're explicit about it. They say they're in love. So you can't really say that something's bait when it is real.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting because it's what you kind of see as explicit queer love, and it's what your references are. And if you're constantly looking at heterosexual relationships as the barometer for what we define as love, then if something doesn't play in a specific way, or like, why is this being bait? And do you mean, like, I think there's probably this idea of like what we see as love is very like heteronormative. So then we don't, like, people don't feel they're getting the representation they deserve because it doesn't look like what we consider it to be.
A lot of the people who really pushed for that doctor companion relationships were young women, young female fans. And it's kind of the first time, Jodie Whittaker's era was the first time that we kind of saw, I saw anyway, young female and non-binary fans feel properly represented and feel able to engage in Doctor Who fandom, because it can be, and it still is, quite a male-dominated fandom. I think that part of the reason that maybe those complaints came about is because when it comes to representation of gay love on screen, quite often it is two men who fall in love, and they're often two white men, and they're often two white cisgender men, and they're kind of palatable. Whereas, and there still are, and there should be more, lesbian relationships on screen and bi-female relationships on screen, where you see two women get together or two femme people get together, and it just doesn't happen as often. And when Russell came back, a lot of, particularly in 2005, of a lot of his writing then was from the perspective of a gay man.
Yeah. And I think this next series is going to be an interesting one as well, because Yasmin Finney has also just joined the cast, and she's going to be the first trans actress to do so. Like, do you think that is another important moment for the show?
So she's going to be playing the daughter of Donna Noble, who is probably one of the best known and best loved companions in Doctor Who history. At this moment in time, Yasmin being on the show and playing a trans character, playing a trans teenager from the sounds of it, is something that's going to be really important, particularly in a show like Doctor Who, which is a family programme. Mm-hmm. I think that her being there is going to mean so much to the representation of trans people, particularly in this time where there's a lot of anti-trans rhetoric from various corners, and it feeds into Russell's writing now, which has become more and more political. Doctor Who has always been a political program. You know, there's a famous episode, two-parter, Aliens of London, World War III, which is in series one. And to cut a long story short, aliens disguise themselves as politicians and get into Downing Street and then say, there's a big alien spaceship up above and we need nuclear warheads from the UN to bomb this alien spacecraft, because they're threatening to blow us up.
As the Prime Minister, if aliens fake an alien crash, an alien pilot, what do they get? Us. They get us.
And the Doctor watches that and goes, don't be ridiculous, no one's ever going to believe that. And Rose says, well, they did the last time. And that was broadcast in 2005. It's a massive allegory for weapons of mass destruction and the war in Iraq. So it has never been a non-political program. I think it's very obvious as to why he's cast Jinx, why he's cast Yasmin Finney, why he's cast Pete McHale, who's going to be the first trans man in Doctor Who. I think there's a very clear message that he's wanting to send at this particular moment in time.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I was thinking about these castings and the fact that Jinx Monsoon has obviously been cast, like, we love her, she's amazing, but she's also been cast as a villain. And there's something like historically across like a lot of media, particularly when I think of cartoons and villains in cartoons, but also villains in like real life productions, tend to be queer coded, or they tend to like definitely feel like they're queer. And I wondered if you kind of had thoughts on this idea of like villains always being kind of queer coded individuals. And if you think it's probably different this time, given the context you've given about Russell T. Davies.
Yes, there's a history of queer-coding villains. Mm-hmm. So you only need to look at particularly Disney villains.
Yeah,
people like Jafar. Really. There's like a very clear kind of queer camp coding around him.
Princess, there's someone I'm dying to introduce you to.
Jafar!
But also the references that producers would pull on when creating a villain, someone like Ursula, in The Little Mermaid is based on Divine, the very famous drag performer, and is why I've been really interested in the discussion around Melissa McCarthy's makeup in The Little Mermaid. And it's like, yeah. Well, it's because it's drag,
it's
makeup.
Drag, yeah.
It's based on Divine, who had a pencil thin brow and had a blocked brow and had very pale skin.
This prince fellow, not that I blame you, he is quite a catch, isn't he?
You know, you can very clearly see those influences. We're at a point now where I think we're happy and ready to look at 3D versions of queer people, of black people, of being working class, of all these different subsections of people. We're in an age where we're being told as queer people that we are evil and that we are sinful and that we are wrong. And those voices are getting really, really loud. And as a response to that, there's a kind of a thing at the moment happening where queer people will say, okay, if you think I'm evil, if you think I'm sinful, if you think I'm disgusting, I'm going to live in that. All of the abuse that has been targeted at Sam Smith in the last four has been because they have woken up and gone, you want me to be this caricature evil villain? Fine, I'm going to do it. And they stand on the stage at the Grammys in horns and dressed in red with red lighting, and Kim Petras, a trans woman, singing in a cage. When everyone gets their knickers in a twist and goes, oh my goodness, pearl clutching, can't believe Sam Smith's doing on this stage. And they go, well, this is your interpretation of me. If you find it disgusting and distasteful, that's because you've asked for this to be put onto me. Now it is neither to chastise people because they are queer or to try and sneak people in who are queer into literature. It is now, it's a middle finger.
Yeah.
Now, it's a act of rebellion. It's no longer trying to be like, oh, well, I'm gonna put this character as queer, or I want to put queer people into these materials, into cinema or into film, but I have to make them evil so I can get away with it. It is us going, as a community going, screw you, really.
More generally about the way that queer culture is presented in pop culture, do you think this is a good moment for queer representation in pop culture currently?
I think Doctor Who is going to be a really great moment for queer representation because of the 3D nature that I was talking about earlier, that we're going to see characters who are obviously queer, but there are going to be queer heroes and there are going to be queer villains. I think the biggest LGBT plus program I can think of the top of my head at the moment is Drag Race. The mainstreamification of what it means to be queer, what it means to do drag, you know, there's a whole subsection of drag that's not represented on that program in the form of kings, for example. Queer culture on screen, if you don't fit into a particular box or you don't have a financial worth, it's like, well, why do I want to bother?
Let's take a minute, but Shantae, you stay. And when we come back, we'll talk to drag queen Fat Butcher.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back, queens. We've talked about how drag queens and queer communities may be having a moment in pop culture, but off screen, there's a darker side to this. Far-right groups have been protesting at drag queen story events across the country, with performers being targeted in person and online. I wanted to talk to a drag queen about the highs and lows of the art.
An icon, a professional hot mess, the illegitimate love child of Pam St. Clements and Elton John. I'm a bald, non-binary, like bearded, fat drag queen, a very glamorous Fabergé egg.
Fat Butcher is a performer who runs drag queen events around the country.
I started performing in drag or doing drag for myself at the beginning of lockdown. And I ran out to Superdrug, like just before they shut all the shops. Mm. And grabbed all the makeup that I could find, all the cheapest makeup, and was like, I'm just going to see if I can work out how to do this at home. I started an online bingo on Zoom every week in lockdown as a way to raise money for the artists who I'd been supporting who were suddenly out of work. And it became a kind of viral thing. We built a little community around it. And then people started asking me to do it in the real world. And now it's my full-time job. So in the end, I stole everyone's jobs that I was trying to help.
Well, you still helped them along the way, you know?
Truly, truly.
And why did you create Fat Butcher?
I guess, like, I created Fat as a way to kind of be the representation that I hadn't seen and to celebrate the parts of myself that I'd always felt a bit uncomfortable about. And historically, that's what drag's always been about.
Mm.
So like drag is an act of reclamation. And I guess for me, like Fat Butcher has been that.
You've spoken a lot about drag being a way to build community, build connection, help to understand yourself better. And obviously everyone kind of engages with drag now, particularly because of how like, you know, quote unquote mainstream you said it was. But do you think there are maybe some misconceptions or misunderstandings about drag that you kind of see happen or you've seen conversations or that you've noticed?
I think that ultimately people have wrongly come to understand it as an art form that is inherently adult or sexualized in some way. Where it gets confusing is that it's attached to queer identities and queer people are often only viewed by wider society as having sex lives rather than living full lives. And obviously that is an important part of everybody's life. It's a privilege that we're not afforded that straight people are, which is that they can have, you know, full and multifaceted lives. But right. Our lives will always be presented for the straight gaze, G-A-Z-E, not Y-S.
In 2021, you were caught up in the culture wars that were happening. Can you tell us a bit about what happened to you?
I run a project called Palava, which is a program that works with theatres and arts and cultural organisations to support LGBTQ plus artists to make performance work for children and families. But we got sort of targeted by online, well, particularly anti-trans groups who led a sort of campaign to try and get the project shut down. They were sort of conflating some of the work that some of the artists, myself included, had done that was specifically made for adult audiences. We were accused of grooming children, being abusers, or we were called like a Jimmy Savile tribute act at one point.
This is mad.
And it sort of bubbles up around quite an intensive week of being the center of an online Twitter storm and local news and writing to the Arts Council and local councils to try and get the project cancelled. Yeah, so we were caught up in the middle of that process. Historically, when society is targeting, a society at large is targeting a marginalised group of people, they will often seek to present that group of people as a threat to whoever that society deems is the most vulnerable at the time. So I think what's really important to say is that there's absolutely no evidence or data, and there's been a lot of research into that, to suggest that you're any more likely to experience forms of abuse from homosexual or same-sex attracted people as you are from straight people. There's literally no evidence of that at all. But this is a long-standing trope that has been used by media, particularly sort of hate groups who have an agenda against a particular community, as a way to stir up hate. And unfortunately, it's one that sticks.
I still struggle to understand why people automatically assume that anything a queer person is doing is automatically sexual. And as a result, if it involves children, it is something that we should be suspicious of or something that is wrong. This whole idea that queerness is associated with like paedophilia, which is mad, but it's like people always make this leap and I don't understand why.
We could try for a really long time to sort of unpack why that is. And I don't know if we'd ever reach a logical answer, because we're not dealing with a logical problem. There are many arguments that your children are a lot safer with like drag performers than they are in like organized religious spaces, for example. This is one of the examples of privilege that non-queer people have. We aren't afforded the same like plurality to our lives. I think about, like, I use this example a lot, but Tom Hardy, for example, he can play Venom and like kill a bunch of people in the film and like, you know, do all kinds of stuff that we would never show to young children. But then he still could read stories on CBeebies and be celebrated for that. And we would never question an actor's work in one film or one area isn't representative of what they will do specifically for young audiences or specifically for other people. But queer people are not afforded that same understanding.
And obviously your kind of engagement with these awful people happened in 2021, and we're now in 2023. And, you know, a lot of this stuff still exists. There's even a protest happening this Saturday. I kind of want to know, for you, like, do you see progress happening? Do you see things changing between 2021 and 2023? Have you seen things that have given you hope somewhat that things can be different?
We are seeing an increase in backlash. That's part of a wider picture of increasingly more extreme views and the normalization of those views. I think we're seeing hate play a really big part in our current social and political discourse. The more that drag and queer identities get pushed into the mainstream, the more we're going to see a louder backlash against it. Because I think people have been it's been very easy to ignore us until recently. And now it's at a point where if you want to ignore what we do, you will have to actively make that choice to ignore us rather than be able to pretend like we don't exist. Because we're taking up space in ways that we haven't before.
What keeps you motivated every day to get up and be Fat Butcher?
Money.
Listen, a girl gotta eat.
And I'm part joking, but obviously, the cost of living crisis is in full effect. What keeps me wanting to do it is that when it works, my drag is at its most effective. I get to feel connected to my community. There's a real sense of like bringing people together. And actually, I get to see in those moments the possibility of what a better future can look like.
Pop culture is always ahead of the curve. It's a safe space for those who feel shunned by the outside world. And to be honest, I'd rather live in the wacky world of Daleks and drag queen villains than right here where grown adults protest drag shows. Grow up, get a life. Well, that brings us to the end of another fabulous episode. And if you've loved listening to this podcast as much as I've loved hosting it, then don't be shy, babes. Leave a review and subscribe to the Pop Culture Hive. This week's episode was produced by Mrs. Summerfield, Patty Moyer, with Lady Charity Bang Bang, Lily Mae Simons. Sound design by Lady Ophelia Cutterbitch, Mao Lasetto. Original music by Dame Peaches Ho, Axel Coutier. And the executive producer is Madam Ophelia Goodnight, Maz Eftage. That's all from me, Dame Orgasmavision. Sashay away until next Thursday.
This is The Guardian.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.